We now dwelt in a very large prison without walls, bounded by Canada, Mexico, and two oceans. There were the jailers, the turnkeys, the informers, and somewhere in the Midwest, the solitary confinement of the special internment camps. Most people did not appear to notice. Since there were no literal walls or barbed wire, since they had committed no crimes and had not been arrested or taken to court, they did not grasp the change, the dread transformation of their situation. It was the classic case of a man kidnapped while standing still. Since they had been taken nowhere, and since they themselves had voted the new tyranny into power, they could see nothing wrong. Anywho, a good third of them, had they known, would have thought it was a good idea anyway. Their freedom to do as they were told had been preserved. As Ferris F. Fremont told them, now the war would be brought to an honorable conclusion, and at home, the mysterious organization, Aramchek, could be annihilated. The loyal Americans could breathe freely again. Their freedom to do as they were told had been preserved. The future is not what it used to be. Or is it? Hello and welcome. I'm Douglas Bowles, and this is 42 Minutes, a production of SyncBook Radio and distributed by thesyncbook.com. You can find our archives at 42minutes.com, and you can reach us by sending a message to mail at 42minutes.com. You can also follow our tweets at Sync42 and at SyncBook. It's Sunday, September 25th, 2016, and today we will meet a Sync friend from the Bay Area who just recently released a solo album of music. Oh my gosh, I don't know how to say your last name. Is it Isaiah?
Isaiah, yeah. And hey, Doug.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me. This is great.
Wait.
what a great intro, man. Yeah.
Hold on. we're not quite there yet, but so do you go by RM or Raz?
You can call me Michael. How about that? I'll throw a total left-hand turn to you.
Perfect. Michael Isaiah is the multi-instrumentalist songwriter who is also a member of High Witness, the BWBS, and Evil After. The new album is called The Future Is Not What It Used to Be, and it's available at his Bandcamp page, rmisaiah.bandcamp.com. He's been around the Sync circles on Twitter for a while now, and so it's great to be finally meeting him. But before we do so, I would like to take a moment to acknowledge all the members. Last week's show celebrated the Sync Book's 5th anniversary, and thus this week I need to celebrate all the Sync Book Plus charter members who made this possible. Thank you all. We could not have done it without you. And so, thank you, RM Isaiah, for being a member. It's great to be finally meeting you. How are you doing tonight?
Likewise. I'm great, Doug. Thanks.
Excellent. So I don't know. Maybe we start with Philip K. Dick. That was from Radio Free Albemuth, and it seems like his stuff sometimes intersects with reality, and the Ferris F. Fremont stuff is a little scary, because we might be going there.
It's the Valis trilogy, you know, it was big to me. And I remember as I was finishing Divine Invasion, is that the last one? A guy came up to me and he's like, oh, Radio Free Albemuth, you know, there's another one. You know,
yeah.
And man, those four books. Yeah, that was it seems like that guy was much. I mean, like Huxley, you know, we can see how he painted a picture, and you know, he was taught by Orwell. So that makes sense. Right. But even before that was this guy. I don't know if you've ever read the book Zamyatin wrote called We.
No.
Have you heard of that one? It's a Russian guy from the 20s. It's basically what Orwell took the story. I don't know if he stole it or whatever, but it's the same story, only much better in my opinion. Philip Dick didn't really, I don't know. He was different though. There was something else about Dick that I think is proven true now, that he was transcendent. There was something about Dick that transcends time, which was really the question, I think, with synchronicity, music, time is the big anomaly, you know, that we're dealing with, you know, how it works, you know, what it is, you know.
Yeah.
Because we know things are connected and we see it when we find these synchronicities, but it's what is time. It does different things, you know. So, but when you play music, that's really all you're dealing with is time, you know. It's like you're directly working with time, you know. And I think it's the key. It's the key. I think if we can understand more about time, we'll get a little more of what reality is, you know.
And so I'm curious, how did you find us? And then, you know, tell us what role synchronicity plays in your life.
I've had synchronicities like everyone, you know. But I think I found the Ghost Light in around 2012. I think I looked up Neil Kramer, and you had Neil Kramer on. Is that right? You had Neil Kramer on pretty early, right?
Yeah. I think he's been on a couple of times.
Yeah. And I caught the early version and just followed it from then on. Yeah, man, it's really different now. It's really gotten fantastic. I love it, man. I think you guys have really come somewhere. I mean, if you listen to the first ones, they were great too, but it's become so professional and so good now.
Oh, thank you. Well, awesome. Yeah.
I listened to the last podcast you did with Alan, and I totally agree with you about this David Plate podcast that you guys just did on Always Record, the live one.
Yeah.
It was a game changer. I mean, and I think a lot of us have seen that coming for a while with David, but wow, man, you know, that guy he's really, I don't know if more people could listen to what he's saying, you know, that's an ascended. I mean, he's really putting it together now. I mean, it's like it was so scattered for all of us, but now he's just like, God, you know, it seems like something's moving through him that's otherworldly, you know?
Yeah, it really does. Yeah.
I wish I could have seen that. You were in Olympia. I wish I could have seen that. That must have been incredible.
No, I was there for just the first portion.
Oh,
yeah, I did not. I wasn't there. I wasn't in the room for the Always Record. I think it was so that's the funny thing is that we're getting a document, and that document, so everyone's perspective of the actual thing itself, you know, they were coming from their own vantage point, and they're seeing, I think Will mentioned this, that, you know, it's only after you listen to something like a second time and a third time that you actually begin taking in more of what is actually happening. Like, this happens to me when I edit the shows, because it's like, oh wow, I'm not really hearing everything the guest is saying. I'm like, and maybe this is how I can do this, where I can zero in on the kernel of what they're trying to say, but all the other words, I don't know. I'm like chasing a rabbit, and so I'm doing this dance with the guest, and it's always amazing.
Oh, certainly. Yeah.
It's always amazing what they say and what I hear after the fact. It's like, wow, this is so good. I had no idea.
And there's a part of yourself that is hearing that, though. You know what I mean? Like, it's that same guy that's driving the car when you're singing the song. You know, it's that guy's there. You know, that part of yourself is listening to every word. And that's probably why later on you make another connection, it seems even more valuable, you know?
Yeah. So how long have you been working on The Future Is Not What It Used to Be?
That record probably took me about 2 years. I had a hard drive crash, lost a bunch of stuff, and it ended up being a blessing, like most things, you know.
Yeah.
When something goes wrong, it leads to something better, and it was. But no, I put that out in April, and I thought it would be out last year. But no big deal. That's in the scope of music. That's nothing.
And so, the other group. So you put out something in 2012 as High Witness.
Yes. Well, that's, you know, that's like my Syncbook Press. That's my umbrella, you know, where I have other songwriter friends, and we make music together. So we play live under high witness, and it can be anything. You know, we have trumpet players. We have, you know, whatever we decide to make of it, you know, at that time. It's great.
And one of the things that I was noticing is that on the solo album, you're singing on all the tracks, but then
yes.
on High Witness is more instrumental. Is that true, or just the ones that I was listening to?
That album was, yeah, that album that I think you're talking about was all pretty much samples and instrumental stuff. Yeah. But these days, actually, we're singing about half the time, and we do that cinematic stuff too, because we all do scoring and we also write songs. So it's like kind of a Floyd thing where you kind of marry the two, you know?
Yeah.
But definitely, yeah. Yeah, like a lot of atmosphere. I love playing shows where you're not the guy with the spotlight on you. You're kind of the person, you know. I love doing the stuff where it's like an art gathering or something, where you're just creating the atmosphere. That's why I love scoring. I'm scoring a film piece right now, and it's my favorite thing to do, you know, where even when it's an album, it's the focus piece. So when you do behind the film, you're just able to manipulate without being the focus, which I prefer, actually, you know.
Well, so the stuff that I was listening to him does have a significant level of doominess on it.
Okay, yeah, probably.
That's
fair, for sure.
Stylistically, I mean, it's great. So there are portions of it that, and it's hard for me to talk about music without referencing other music, you know.
Okay, sure.
It's super annoying, but this, you know, like, I think everyone does it too, but I wouldn't say, oh, you are a blah and a blah, but
no, it's reference. Yeah. It's reference.
Yeah. And so at times I'm reminded of the Doors a little bit, but
oh,
then...
yeah, that's so funny. I was just talking about them for this morning. That's hilarious.
But what I'm also, thing. Yeah, I'm also reminded a little bit of a band like the Black Lips that has this kind of,
oh, okay.
I don't know what that flavor is, but you know, it's kind of like it's the devil at the crossroads. It's kind of, it's darkness. It's you know, like No Country for Old Men. It's you know, there's something.
Oh yeah, I love
you know,
it.
There's the shadow that's, and that your voice is the thing that I really picked up on the album, that you have. What do people call that? It's either gravel or whiskey or some kind of. You know what?
Yeah.
I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the safe place to do that is in your art, right? I mean, if we're gonna balance the shadow and we're gonna balance ourselves, it's the best place to do it, I think. You know what I mean? Because it's the thing you can actually. I mean, making music. I'm not even sure what that is. When you record a piece of music, I don't even know if we realize fully what we're doing when we do that, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
You're when you're capturing, either with film or with tape, even audio, all these moments in time stacked maybe on each other or, you know, but it's a magical act for sure. There's something bizarre about it. And the more you do it, I don't know. It's just it's a good laboratory for someone who's just seeking answers, you know, or seeking better questions even, you know.
Yeah.
Music is it's always been a thing, like where I have, it's made me read, it's made me do a lot of really otherwise things I wouldn't do, because I don't want to write about things that I don't know about, so I read a bunch of books, you know. It's like all these things, you know, that go into making something, which every time you do it, it's never quite the thing, but you get better and you come back and you get better and you come back, you know, and when you learn that its fulfillment is built in it, it's not about it doing something for you, that's when it becomes something completely else, I think. I mean, that's when it become fulfilling, really fulfilling to me, is when I stopped worrying about the result of the thing, you know, how it would be received, you know.
Yeah, I'm curious what kind of rabbit holes you've gone down. Like, earlier you were mentioning about the idea of time. Have you done any reading on that?
Oh yeah, you know, this there's a, you can even watch all these videos about Saturn. Everything goes back to Kronos when you get into time, right? And then everyone says, oh, it's Satan, it's darkness, it's limitation, you know, it's, and perhaps, but, you know, like, I think that just like everything contains its opposite, man. And if you're in what I, the medium I work in is completely Saturnian, it's time and limitation are the essential tools to make music. You have to have time. And you have to have limitation, you know, there's, otherwise you can't do it. So it there's a good thing to it too, right? If we understand it, then it becomes a whole nother thing, you know, whereas when we don't understand it, maybe we are a victim of it, you know?
Hmm. And so then with like a song, The Black Moon of Saturn, I don't even know, does Saturn have a black moon that you're referencing, or is this a metaphor?
There's one called Iapetus, and it has a completely white side and then a completely black side. And it's the one that looks like the Death Star. It has the seam in the middle where It looks like it was put together, you know. That was something that I heard, I don't know even where I got that from, but it was in my head from something I heard Kubrick had said to Arthur Clarke, or vice versa, I'm not sure. Basically that someday we'll return there, like that's our spot, like, and I found it curious, and I don't know, I just kind of wrote it from that point of view, you know, that were the truth, even though, you know, it's whatever it is.
It's funny that you mentioned this, because one of the rabbit holes that I went down was the this writer named James Glick, and he wrote a book about chaos, and he also wrote a book about information, and he's just such a fabulous writer. And in that is the idea of systems theories, which is what really turns my crank. You know, back at the everything is connected thing. It's like we don't understand the architecture of why synchronicity is happening, but we definitely can try and, you know, get under the hood and figure it out. His latest book is called A History of Time Travel. And so I'm just so, it's like, well, what, why? I don't have any idea why there, but I think, you know, I'm excited to see, because, I mean, there was definitely a time when I was considering because some of those physicists, they really, you know, say time doesn't exist. There isn't any space between, and that's the kind of stuff where you're like, what?
And at the same time, though, I can write a song at a tempo, right? I can preserve it on a tape and send it to you, and you hear it in that same tempo. So it has to exist on some level, right? Because that thing still exists in another place, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's still that you perceive it in time the same way that I did. Well, maybe not the same way, but in a similar way that I did, you know? So I don't know, man. I wonder if time does exist, but I think obviously we don't understand how it works, you know, just like most things. I mean, when you really look at it, the thing that the true conclusion is that no one knows, you know, no one knows what's happening at all, you know? We're put into this situation, and there are figureheads who pretend to know, but actually no one has a clue what is happening, you know? And I don't understand why.
That's really interesting that you say that. So, I mean, it sounds like what you're saying, and I think I might, if this is true, agree with you, but that the people in charge are acting like they know what's going on, but they really are just in the dark as everyone else.
That's what I think.
And then, I mean, so it's easy to say, oh, there's some dark overlords that are actually running the show from behind the curtain, but I'm not certain that, I mean, there's a lot of unconscious decisions.
That might be also true, but there are other forces in play for sure. I mean, that's what synchronicity almost proves, you know? that there are other forces in play, you know, and whatever you want to call it is kind of irrelevant, but it's the connectivity. And, you know, I wonder how it leads back to this, to an idea of predestination too, because a lot of people, I think that a lot of people have that software running in the background where everything is kind of planned out, because we talk about it all the time. You know, this was meant to be, this was, you know, oh, you know, and I wonder about that. Like, even like, especially among musicians, like someone will act like, well, I just play music, I never have to work at it. Like, that makes it better that you didn't put the time into it or something, because it's like meant to be, right? You're a chosen one, right? And I think the software is this kind of idea of things being already worked out in a way, which I don't understand. I don't think that works for the better of people, because at the end of the day, you know, what do you have to do, really, you know?
So why the title, The Future Is Not What It Used to Be?
Well, you know, I love plays on words, but it literally isn't what it used to be. And when you look at it now, I mean, a lot of the stuff that I was reading about in my 20s and all this, and I thought, well, surely some of this is just pure exaggeration. It's it seems like it's kind of coming true, man. All of this paranoia and all that seems pretty justified when you look back on it now, you know. It's bizarre, you know. I mean, it's not what it used to be, but that doesn't mean it's going to be bad. At the same time, I think that, you know, something good can always come from something far worse than you would ever want, you know. So I'm not a pessimist at the same time. I actually think that the way synchronicity and the synchronicity community has taken kind of those doomy ideas and just played with them and not tried to create conclusions about things. Like, it's like what I came back to saying, that no one really knows. And I think in the synchronicity community, it's totally okay to say that. You know, even the smartest people like David Plate will say, I have no idea what this means. And that's, you don't think a person is any less intelligent. In fact, it's just being honest, you know?
Yet we'll trust our intuition to take some really crazy leaps that usually they pay off. And that's what artists and musicians do. You know, I just wondered what it would sound like if I did this at the same time as this, right? And then...
Right. Taking chances, right.
Yeah.
And not claiming to know the answer is fine. Like, no one, if you think about it, we have all these belief systems, but no one really ever, I mean, maybe you have a family that's religious or something, and I don't know about that, but whoever asks you what you believe, you know, it's not really required. You can easily go around and live a full life without believing in much of anything. Like, you can entertain an idea without believing it is true or false. It doesn't really matter. You know, it's fine without that. It doesn't need that. It sits in your brain just fine. It's pretty, you know, it's a big realization for me when I realized, oh, I don't even have to believe. I can believe what I feel like believing.
I wonder, though, if we don't need something. I mean, we need a lens somehow to give our lives meaning, though.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I'm always chasing different people's stories to try and understand how and why they perceive things the way they do, like their idea of what is truth.
But the reality is you're reporting the data as you have it, though. I don't know what it is, and it's okay, but I still see a divine, a bigger thing. I with synchronicity, with music, with creativity, you interact with it. You actually know it. But at the same time, knowing what it is, where it comes from, how long it took the earth to be created, all this is like beyond my knowledge, and I'm okay with that, right? Perhaps, you know, and I'm open to that something will reveal it to me, but you know what I mean? Like, knowing when and where everything happened isn't as important as garnering the essence of it, you know, which is that there is this other force that organized this thing somehow, you know? And whatever that is, being good doesn't really have much to do with, I mean, people who are good people are going to be good, right? That's the thing that amazes me in this day and age, how many really nice, cool people I run into all the time. If you start to pay attention to that, it's amazing. You know, I mean, you look at the news and yet you're running into just nice person after nice person if you try to even notice it, you know?
I went through a period of time when maybe I was too hung up on the idea of like things happen for a reason. And so the idea that something completely and totally and utterly random would just happen to you without any like karmic balance or something that you needed. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
right, right.
Like I think it was the movie Zodiac Killer where just completely, usually bad guys have a reason to do the bad things to the person that they're doing to them, like real specific. It's not just totally random. And it's hard for my brain to say, oh, the universe is completely random, because it doesn't feel random. It feels pretty organized. But maybe that randomness is part of the organization at the same time. So I don't know.
I wonder, I was thinking about that earlier because I was thinking when I'm improvising music, when I make a mistake, whatever that is, right? Because you're improvising it, who knows what a mistake is. But was that planned? You know what I mean? It's like, is that mistake built into the thing? Is that fall that you have built into the thing? That's, you know, that goes to time too, right? It's like if you say something is random, who's to say that maybe if you look far enough into the future, it fits to a pattern, you know, which is what synchronicity kind of is. It's pattern recognition, right? Where you're recognizing connections, right? To different things in different places in time. And I don't know. I don't know if randomness does exist, but I think until we understand what time is, maybe the future isn't what it used to be. I mean, maybe it's farther. Maybe it is not ahead of us. You know what I mean? What a bizarre idea that Philip Dick kind of talked about, you know, like who's to say that maybe we aren't going backwards sometimes? How would we really know, you know?
Well then, right. But the Valis loop is the idea that we're not going anywhere, that we're trapped in this,
right?
In the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. That we need to get out of the black iron prison. And I can feel that sometimes and agree with that.
It does. And the Gnostic stuff all just makes so much sense, man. You know, I mean, when you look at the technology and how fast it's going to take over, man, it's not even really debatable at this point. It's just a matter of when, like, you know, it's going to be interesting though, at the same time, like what an interesting time to be alive. I mean,
I wish I could remember that I was reading something this morning and it was too early and I don't know where I found it. So it's almost like it was in a dream, but it was talking about how the whole economy is driven by the idea of the future. And so all the corporate profits are built on the idea of moving money from one place to another because the idea that there is no future, the future never comes. You know, because the future is always out there on the horizon. So there's always hope that there's going to be more. It's so funny what we are as little creatures who believe that, you know, there'll be prosperity in the future. But there really isn't a future. It's just it's now. It's betting on it's just making. Finance is one of the things that tickles me these days because that's all it is. It's the illusion of prosperity at some point in the future so that we can create, like we can make up money.
Especially when the fact is that there's not enough money that exists to pay back now it's become that it's necessary that people suffer because there's all this debt, right? And there's not enough money to pay back the debt in existence, right? Not even near enough.
That's
not
you just close, reminded me. Right? You just reminded me where I saw it.
So it's
yeah.
necessary that people suffer now. That's for sure. That's what that is, like, you know.
No, this morning I figured it out. It was a article in an alt paper in Seattle called The Stranger, and the guy was telling college students to go ahead and get credit cards and max them out, because that's what the rich people are doing, and don't worry, because you're not going to have to pay it back anyway.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. That's right.
And this dystopian idea, right? Every movie, the future is depicted as a bleak Mad Max world, right? Every single one, which one isn't, right? Where the future is not horrible, you know? And so what does that run in your mind? Oh, well, this is the scripture. The thing is unfolding. And yeah, there really isn't a tomorrow. So why save? Why prepare? Right. It maybe isn't how people think they're thinking, but I don't know, man. It seems like that kind of.
It's interesting because, I mean, 100 years ago, they lived much differently. They thought about time much differently. So when they built things, they were definitely building things to last like a whole generation. It wasn't a disposable world where you built a house to last for 100 years. Like you built a washing machine to last 25 years. I don't know. Or even
you wrote a book to make it a classic book that would live 100 years. You wrote a song that you could build an album around, that you could build a catalog and have a career. You know what I mean? Like now it's all that, you know, it's all that. We'll have a hit song now and a viral video. Like, there you go.
I don't know. I mean, so what do you think about?
That's okay. Which is okay. I don't feel like that's what, I mean, that's not what I'm doing at all. It's a totally different thing. If I look at pop music, I just don't even really, it seems like a different thing than what I do. I mean,
it's such a strange time because, I mean, the instrument that people have is the computer. And so, of course, they're going
to
play their computers. And they're doing interesting stuff, but it sounds...
Yeah, yeah.
It's real.
And a lot of it's great, right? It's very polarizing, though. It's like the computer has really been another atomic blast. It's been another split of the atom because it's made a lot of people being able to get an entire education. It's made other people completely zombied out. It's, you know, it's ruined lives. And yet it's, you know, it's like, it's a division, man. It's a powerful tool. So people are going very different directions with it.
Yeah, no, definitely. Cause there's so much noise now that you can be constant diversion. You just can completely like do nothing except, you know, it's like total entertainment.
And at the same time, I've been working with a guy on music in France. He's in France for 6 years. I'm working on a movie with a guy in England right now.
Right.
Like, I couldn't do that. You know?
Yeah. I mean, so like for me and Alan and Andras and Will and all these, I mean, we would have had to like all go to San Francisco or New York. There had to be some other kind of candle that drew all the moths together. But, you know, thankfully... You know, it's like Google. It's this weird thing where it's like, I don't know if this is going to be the, you know, the apocalyptic creating thing or if it's, and because like free blogs, here's a free blog and we all find each other through blogging. Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably going to be both, man. It's probably going to be both things. I mean, it'll be the thing that destroys us and saves us. I don't know. It's how that's possible, but there's a division happening, you know. I mean, it seems like whatever humanity is now or was, that's changing really quickly, you know, and we're witnessing it, you know, that humanity is changing, you know, it's becoming something else. Right in front of our eyes. I mean,
it is, because so when ThinkBook was dealing with, I mean, so nationalism and like white power, I guess, is the only way to say it. So there's this, Identity is definitely something that can give people meaning. And once times are scary, you want to hold on to something solid. And so, like, the idea of identity can be something like history, lineage. You know, this is comforting. This makes sense, right? But that whole wind has been just blowing and sweeping, and you can see it where it's gone, you know.
It's, again, divide and conquer, right? It's the division again. It's reflecting down as above, so below. So you have it literally happening with technology, dividing how people are, right? And then you have it in society where they can work it out to, of course, us, the poor people, fighting each other again, you know, blaming one another while they get off with their little... They do what they want. You know, it's the same thing. It seems really obvious to me. I don't understand why so many people are going for it. It's really sad, actually. You know, the thing with the cops and all that is obviously terrible, man. But I think that it's not really, in my opinion, it's more of a tyrannical issue than it is a race issue. I mean, they're killing
class.
Us, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
class, man.
Well, there's some...
It's class.
We need a new ideology. There needs to be... I don't know. I mean, we're going to have to work and eat and do these things, and there's going to be, like, buying and selling, but it just seems like... I don't know. We're ready for, like, a reset of some kind of revolution or some kind of... something new.
So it seems like it's going to work itself out one way or another. You know, it's out of the box. You know, it's happening. It's been building for years. We're all looking at it just going, okay, what is this, man? You know, but who knows if it's going to be necessarily bad. As long as we're going to assume things, why would we assume the bad? You know,
Although, last spring when I was doing like the first installment of the book club, and we're talking with Dennis about The Man in the High Castle, I'm like, why are they making this show now? I don't, you know, why now?
Right, right.
And
right.
So at that point in time, I was just like, you know, because it's such an interesting consideration to consider a fascist world, but then at the same time to watch us in... you know, 9 months time go just completely into an alternate reality almost. It's amazing to me.
Right.
And so, you know, that...
Yeah.
I mean, arguably, the world is pretty rotten. You know, that's what the news is relating, but it could get so much worse is the thing.
Oh, exactly. And it's also great, too. That's the thing that we're trying to point out, I think, is that... there's a whole other side to it that is occurring, you know, simultaneously, you know, that is not in your face or on your screen, you know, where people are making things and like all the stuff you guys are doing and all the, you know, all the stuff that you could easily miss, you know, that is certainly thriving in there, you know, and growing. So maybe that's just the point is you, you go through the drama and you do your part in it. You play your role, you know?
Yeah. So what are you working on these days? And how often do you perform out in the Bay Area?
Usually at least once a month we play out. I'm working on a film project with this guy, David V. Barron, who's an awesome filmmaker. And he just made a video for a couple of my tunes. And we're working on a project called Janus. It's about the two-faced god. And yeah, davidvbaron.com. Probably be done pretty soon here, a couple months.
Cool. And so then what kind of shows do you go and see out and about?
I go see shows for sure. A lot of my friends, I have a friend that plays in MJ's Brass Boppers, a killer New Orleans funk band. Camaro Meadow, I go see them a lot. Mudboards, a guy I play with is in that band. They're great. Some really good scene around here right now. It's actually coming back, so it's cool.
Yeah. I think one of the books in the Valis trilogy happens. Timothy Archer is all set in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I tend to read the beats every now and again, and there's lots of
Oh
history.
yeah, City Lights, sure. Very cool.
Do you have any like really stellar synchronicities that you want to share? Like something that, or are yours more, just constant little winks, or do you have any of those monsters?
I've had a few. I mean, I've had a few. When I was only 20 years old, I read or heard on MTV, I believe, that Alice in Chains, the band Alice in Chains, I don't know if you've listened to them or not, but
Sure.
I heard that they had fired their bass player, and I was a bass player, and so I put this. I had this, had this riff that I really liked, and I put it. And I knew I was like, Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains will like this, and it was silly, and I thought it was ridiculous. I put it on a cassette, and I found their management company, and I sent it to them. Attention, Jerry Cantrell. Of course, nothing happened from it. And probably 10 years later, I'm playing in a band, and we're opening for Jerry Cantrell on tour. And we're doing a soundtrack in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I'm playing that same exact riff is now the intro to a song called Karma, of all things. And I'm playing it, and Jerry Cantrell is just walking around in front of us from Alice in Chains, and he stops us and says, "Did you write that, man? I love that. I was going to ask you about that." And then, of course, after we played the song, I told him, I was like, "Man, I sent you that one riff on a tape 10 years ago, man." And it's like, no, it wasn't. It was like something. What is that, man? You know what I mean? Like something in me knew that that particular little 16-bar thing connected with him. Like, and it did. It like actually did. It was, and it was bizarre, man. We agreed how bizarre it was, you know? I don't know what I mean. That's synchronicity to me. I mean, but obviously.
Well, that was 42 minutes. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Thank you.
You bet. You've been listening to Michael Isaiah on 42 Minutes, a production of SyncBook Radio on the SyncBook.com. Be sure and check out his new album, The Future Is Not What It Used to Be, which you can find at his Bandcamp page, rmisaiah.bandcamp.com. For more information about the SyncBook, our guests, to check out past shows, or to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, please be sure and visit our website at thesyncbook.com. If you like this podcast and would like more, consider becoming a SyncBook Plus member. Some of the membership benefits include full access to the complete audio archive, discounts on books, behind-the-scenes scripts, bonus audio and video, as well as seasonal online hangouts with the hosts. All this and more can be found at thesyncbook.com/membership. Thanks so much, and a hunter shows no mercy for the prey, because cold blood, it's the special of the day.
Dark highway home, it's hard to see the signs. Broken hearts on broken bones, it's a long call. Shadows fall. As the light falling rain, kind of fire. gone on.